This hour is brought to you by the Genesis Communications Network, the nation's leader in independently owned and operated talk radio since 1998. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Welcome back to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
Robert Schaefer joins us. He's a UFO skeptic, been around since the early days. We're talking about the Rendlesham Forest case, specifically the case of John Burroughs, who talked about problems dealing with the VA, which are not unusual. We've all heard the news of what's gone on there. Supposedly, information about his military records being expunged, et cetera, et cetera. So let's separate the two things here. We have symptoms. We're not going to assume they're not real. The discussion could be about the cause. But you're saying, Robert, that when he says that there was hanky-panky with regard to his medical and overall military records, he's just making that up?
I didn't say that. It's hard to know exactly what happened. We now know, based on recent news stories, that the VA has been really, it's a scandal in that they're not just failing to provide the medical care to veterans who deserve it and who need it, but also that the VA has been hiding, has been fabricating numbers and hiding the fact that people are waiting years to get medical treatment and so on. So if this is the kind of thing that he's talking about, well, he's not the only one that's had this problem. This is endemic to the VA, at least in recent years and in the current administration. So he wouldn't be the only one to have problems of that kind. But to go and conclude from this that somehow there's some military conspiracy against him to, you know, not provide his care and to remove him from his military records, I don't see anything that, you know, that would convince me of that.
It all depends, again, on whether you believe him, doesn't it?
I guess it does.
All right, so that brings us to something you said to Micah Hanks when he talked to you at a recent UFO event. And we have some questions from Micah we'll ask later. But specifically here, with regard to UFO witnesses, you referred to at least some of them as liars. They're making it all up. Would you expand on that?
Well, is that what Micah said? Because I don't recall.
You don't recall calling UFO witnesses liars?
No, I don't recall that. I don't think I did. Some of them, maybe. I think for the most part, and I've always said this, that the great majority of UFO witnesses are people who are perfectly sincere but are mistaken because of what we've already said about human perception and its malleability, the propensity of a person to incorporate external information and beliefs into a memory because memory is malleable, that they convince themselves they see a large saucer-shaped object or whatever, but it doesn't mean it's true. But that doesn't make them a liar. It just means that they've allowed their imagination to kind of run away. And that's a very human thing to do. I know we've all, you know, been, mistaken about something that we think we've seen or done. But I don't use that term to say, well, they're all liars.
Well, this is what he said on the show last week. Don't know if you heard the episode. I mentioned it to you. He specifically said that you called at least some UFO witnesses liars. In fact, that's his first question here at the Paracast forums. So you're saying you didn't say that. What did you tell him?
Well,
did he just get it wrong?
I'm saying at least some. I'm saying the same thing now. At least some of them are liars. They're hoaxers. They're claiming to make things up. But they're claiming, you know, things that didn't happen. But I said that is not typical. That is not average. I said then, and I'm saying now, the great majority of people who believe they've seen a UFO are perfectly, completely sincere, and they have seen something that to them is puzzling, but it is not literally what they saw because they're mistaken. For example, the Yukon case of 1996 with all these 30 people or something across the Northwest Canada seeing this object they reported as a close encounter of the first kind, a mothership, and it was doing this and doing that and had windows and so on. We now know that it matches those sightings, match completely with the decay of a rocket booster that had been launched by the Russians earlier in the day that had put a satellite into orbit. So they saw something, but their imagination filtered in details that were not there because they have this idea in their head called a UFO or flying saucer. They know what UFOs are supposed to be like. They're supposed to be discs, and they have windows, and they hover, and they maneuver, and so on. And so you conflate the perception that you had of this satellite debris flaming very brightly and moving very quickly across the sky, and then you conflate with that the idea of what a UFO is supposed to be, and that's what you've got. Then you've got this report that is inaccurate, but nobody is lying.
Well, you know, I have to agree with you, Robert, on many cases of untrained observers witnessing various types of unusual anomalies, whatever, and then confabulating their own personal interpretation of what they saw, possibly glomming on to others' descriptions. But what about trained observers? I have a question here from Blowfish at forum.theparacast.com, and he asks, what are your thoughts on military eyewitnesses, civilian pilots, police officers, trained observers who report unknown flying objects, some at very close, in close proximity? I do seem to recall a case where one of these things, officer claimed, hit his car, tore off his aerial, cracked his windshield.
Right. I'm trying to remember what his name was. And Phil Klass suggested that sounds to me like a car that has a police car that's been vandalized. And it may be that he either somebody vandalized it and he jumped to the conclusion that it was a UFO damage, or perhaps he used that as an excuse or leaving his vehicle someplace maybe where it shouldn't have been. But anyway.
So in other words, he was lying then.
In that case, it's possible. I'm not familiar enough with the details. I know Phil Klass made that argument. But
right. Well, what about trained observers? Military pilots, astronauts?
Let's talk about trained observers, that phrase. What is that supposed to mean? Is there such a thing as an observer training class? Of course not. There isn't. Never has been. There's been no such. Now you have to enroll in observing 101, and then you can become a trained observer.
You know what? Let's use the term experienced observer, okay, so we don't argue over that.
Experienced in what?
Having seen a lot of things, being a pilot, being a member of a military, being a police officer, people who need to accurately report what they see, what they observe.
There's no such thing as a Superman or a super observer. They're all human, just like us. But if you recall, and of course Leslie Kane is somebody who thinks that, you know, pilots and generals are super observers, and she quotes Hynek all over the place. She doesn't quote Hynek's statement saying that surprisingly, military and commercial pilots make relatively poor observers.
That's why would that be?
Report.
Why?
Well, I think the reason is that the pilot has one thing, and really one thing only, on his mind when something out of the ordinary occurs, and that is it a danger? What do I have to do to preserve my aircraft, to preserve my safety and that of my passengers? And the pilot is not worried so much about the details of this or that or what it might be, but rather, you know, is it going to collide with me? Is there going to be a, you know, like a prop wash or any kind of a wind from it? And I think really that's what it is. There's no such thing as a trained observer, or you can say an experienced observer, but an experienced observer, again, nobody has experience in, you know, looking at UFOs and you know, get a certificate for a number that you've seen or something. No, it's these people are just like anyone else. It's even the, you know, you say police officers. Well, Alan Hynek went out with when they had these explosions of sightings, so to speak, a huge flare-up of sightings in the Midwest in 1966-67. Hynek went out there and he rode with the police in their car, in their squad cars, as they're going around, and look, there it is again. And he says, well, they're pointing at the star Arcturus. You know, there's nothing that sets a pilot or a policeman away from anyone else in terms of being a credible observer.
Well, of course, they also could be used to seeing stars, planets, conventional aircraft. So when they report something unusual, the question is, what is it? What are they seeing? And we can talk about that in our next segment. We'll also have more questions. We'll also have more questions from our listeners. And by the way, if you subscribe to the Paracast newsletter, go to theparacast.com, theparacast.com. Sign up, get a free copy of Chris O'Brien's Secrets of the Mysterious Valley, the ebook version. More to come with Robert Schaefer, with Gene and Chris. You're in
the Paracast.
Do you need a website? Well, you can get a great deal on hosting services with Namecheap's legendary coupon code. They're offering substantial hosting discounts on shared hosting, business hosting, VPS hosting, reseller hosting, and even dedicated servers. Namecheap is preferred by millions. It's backed by a money-back guarantee. Use the coupon code LEGENDARY to cash in on the special deal at Namecheap.com, Namecheap.com.
First came Attack of the Rockoids, and it was a critically acclaimed success. And now there's The Coming of the Protectors. A former military intelligence man is contacted by a space woman in a dream. A dream that turns out to be a nightmare, because evil forces on our distant planet are planning to conquer the Earth. This is gripping science fiction of the classic kind. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors. Find out more at Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids, R-O-C-K-O-I-D-S.com.
Gold is like nothing else on Earth. From the Romans through the Renaissance, from the Industrial Age to the Space Age, gold has weathered the test of time. For 6,000 years, gold has remained the ultimate store of wealth. According to the World Gold Council and the U.S. Mint, demand is at an all-time high. The stage is being set for the reemergence of gold as the common sense alternative to a fiat paper currency that gets weaker every day. Midas Resources is proud to offer the hard-hitting report that arms you with the truth you need to protect you and your family from the Fed's plans for your hard-earned money. Don't gamble with your future. Call Midas Resources today and ask for your free copy of As Good as Gold. Call 1-800-686-2237 for the report the Fed hopes you'll never see. As Good as Gold can be yours by calling 800-686-2237. If you have ever thought about owning gold, you must read this report. Call Midas today at 800-686-2237.
What good is a Big Berkey water filter?
We get that question a lot here at BigBerkeyWaterFilters.com. And in a word, the answer is protection. Protection from water main breaks, E. coli contamination, environmental chemical spills, pesticide runoff, chlorine taste and smell, and all forms of fluoride. Plus, Big Berkey water filters are the original gravity water filter system and most trusted on the market for a reason. Tested by multiple independent NSF EPA certified labs, they are the gold standard in water purification. At only 1.7 cents a gallon, a single set of filters can last for 5 to 10 years. That means big savings. Big Berkey, the one that's powerful enough to purify stagnant pond water. Get a Big Berkey today at BigBerkeyWaterFilters.com. GCN listeners receive 5% off all ceramic filter systems. Visit our website or call 1-877-99-BERKEY. That's 877-99-BERKEY. Big Berkey Water Filters, for the love of clean water.
The Genesis Communications Network is one of America's premier broadcasters of captivating talk radio. We thank you for listening. Now, just imagine, there are thousands of people who are just as passionate about radio as you are. But what you may not realize is how easy and affordable it is to advertise with us. Radio commercials for your business could be heard on hundreds of radio stations across the U.S. every day. We can help you by creating an effective radio advertising campaign for your company. From script writing to producing your commercial, just like the one you're listening to right now. No other network provides the level of customer service we do. When it comes to radio advertising, we are your one-stop shop. And no matter how big or small your business is, we can help. Email us at advertise@gcnlive.com and an experienced advertising executive will help you take the first step towards driving more customers to your business or website. Advertise@gcnlive.com. Easy, affordable, effective.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com.
When Chris does that voice, I always want to say the Paracast, but I'm not going to do that. Robert Schaefer is joining us. We're talking about witnesses, what they see, what they think they're seeing. So it's your theory here, Robert Schaefer, that regardless of whether they're experienced, trained, whatever, anyone who sees a UFO, that something that is not conventional, does not appear to be conventional, it seems to have maneuverability beyond what we normally would accept in our aircraft, they're basically mistaken somehow.
I would say that's highly likely. Now, of course, you could always argue that the next case that comes along will be the real one. But again, if something is supported only by eyewitness testimony, remember, with the Royal Society of London, this is the world's oldest scientific body, take no one's word for it, is their motto. And in this case, I would say, well, perhaps he did see something, but were there photographs? Were there videos? Was anything seen on radar? And if so, is it consistent? You know, what will happen sometimes is somebody, a radar observer will say, well, I see something on the radar. Go out and see if there's anything up in the sky. And something in the radar looks over in the west, and the guy looks over in the east and says, yeah, I see an object. Well, that's confirmation. No, it's not. They're not in the same place at the same time, and so on and so on. And that never really happens, that you have this consistency, because they just don't, you know, all at the same time.
You're saying here that there have never been simultaneous visual and radar sightings involving UFOs. What about Washington National Airport in 1952?
I didn't say there never were simultaneous sightings. I said that there wasn't any real consistency in terms of where the objects were, how they were moving, and so on. By today's standards, those were very unsophisticated radars in 1952. And in fact, Phil Klass wrote an article, sometime around, I think, 1990, which he pointed out this fact that as the radars have improved over the years, as the electronics has gotten better, there are fewer and fewer radar UFO cases. And most of these cases that we have, we're looking at the old radars. So he's arguing that, you know, as radar gets better and it's better able to distinguish false targets from real ones, then we don't see these radar UFOs as much as we used to.
Well, Robert, have you looked into the Socorro case from April, I think, 64? Where do you come down on Lonnie Zamora and Jordan, the state patrolman that arrived and saw the object disappearing in the distance, the photographs that were taken of the site that were not returned and appeared to have been fogged with some form of radiation, and that's according to Hynek. Have you looked into the Socorro case at all? Where do you come down on that?
Not to a great detail. It's not one of my primary cases or the ones that I have spent much time on. I know Klass spent a lot of time on it. And of course, now recently we have Anthony Bregaglia, who's claiming that it was a student hoax and that this is somehow proved. I could believe perhaps a student hoax, but I haven't seen any proof that that is, in fact, the case or could be. And frankly, I don't know how they would have done it. I mean, students are very clever.
I'm glad you said that.
Especially engineering students, but I don't know how you would fake a thing like that in the daylight, especially.
Yeah.
But the most reasonable explanation that I have heard is a suggestion that this was an early propane balloon, which today, of course, is a familiar sight, but back then it was not. People knew about hot air balloons, but the notion of a self-contained propane-powered hot air balloon was not common in those days. So it's possible, I think, that, you know, somebody was trying out a thing like this. He saw it because, you know, he said there was a whoosh and it went up and so on.
And then flew to the southwest into a fairly stiff breeze.
Well, again, that's what some people say. I'm not completely sure that's the case, but be that as it may. Now, some people said, now, Klass was convinced that the whole thing was a hoax and that Zamora was in on it. He was, you know, he was part of it, and because they wanted to get tourists in there. Now, I'm not sure I really believe that.
That's a real stretch.
If it was a hoax, I think that Zamora was the hoaxee, not the hoaxer. In other words, it was a hoax on him. And one of the points that Bregaglia makes is that, you know, because this is a small town, a college town, and so on, and that Zamora was sort of he was not popular among the college students because he was considered the buzzkill. He was a guy who would check to see if you had alcohol and whatever. So it's plausible that they might have wanted to play some, you know, some sort of trick on him or hoax on him rather than having him be involved in the hoax. It's something that, you know, when you think about these cases, it might be large hoaxes, might or might not be. You have to ask who was in on it and who was fooled by it.
So using that example as a possible explanation, what about the Phoenix Lights case? Do you think that that was a hoax by the military?
Oh, not at all. No, that one is open and shut. Well, there's two parts of it, okay? Now, I think we can all agree. I'm not sure about this, but I think most people would agree that the second part of it, the part of the Phoenix Lights that occurred after 10 p.m., was the flare drop by the Maryland Air National Guard. I think we have that nailed down pretty well. Dr. Lynn wouldn't agree, but I think most people would. I mentioned this once.
That's Lynn Keitai, by the way, folks.
Right, yes, who has a sort of a little cottage industry of promoting the Phoenix Lights. I did have a conversation with James Fox about this a little bit, and he did not disagree when I said that the second part was the flare drops. I think so. We really then have to ask, well, what about the first part that people said they saw this large triangle? Well, I've written this up. If you go to my blog, badufos.com, and there's a search box there, you plug in Phoenix Lights, you'll find what I've written about it. Basically, these were aircraft. There was something called Operation Snowbird, which is it's an ongoing program. It's a pilot training program for the Air National Guard, and now they have even foreign pilots being trained. These were probably A-10s that had flown off to another air base, probably Las Vegas, and come back. They were following the path of the so-called flying triangle, was following that superhighway, if you will, the air corridor from Vegas down to Phoenix and Tucson. There were several people who saw, one fellow with binoculars, another fellow with a telescope, saw the lights and said they were aircraft. And they went right over Phoenix and then came down. And so they appeared to be following Highway Interstate 10. In fact, those were the very last sightings, were just outside of Tucson from people along Interstate 10. And again, we have, and some of them, they reported it as being, you know, remarkable looking and having this, you know, effect on them and so on, which is interesting. This psychological statement is not a statement of, you know, any kind of factual items, but these things behave very much like airplanes that were going to land. Why would these UFOs follow the highway in and then apparently then just disappear as if they were going to land at Davis Mountain Air Force Base, which is what these A-10s did, five of them. And we know that this was not a single object because there was a fellow, can't recall the name right now, who had a video of the lights of the triangle.
Let's break it here. At that point, we'll continue with that video, more detail. Robert Schaefer joining Jan and Chris. You're in
the Paracast.
You're listening to GCN, proudly sponsored by UnseenNow.com. Lock down your digital life at UnseenNow.com. This is GCN.
Graphic Converter is the image manipulation tool for the rest of us. It does not use any database. You get full control of all your files. Want to view the images of a folder? Drag it into Graphic Converter and a powerful browser opens up to show your image files. You could use it for slideshows. You could use it to import images from digital cameras or from scanners. Need to do some image editing? You can do that too in Graphic Converter. Also, print catalogs. Convert from so many formats I can't even list them. Download now to see if Graphic Converter is good for you, like 1.5 million other users. Guess what? You could save money when you buy Graphic Converter. Use the coupon code NIGHTOWL. Use the coupon code NIGHTOWL to get a special price for Graphic Converter. Go to LemkeSoft.com. That's LemkeSoft.com. LemkeSoft.com. LemkeSoft.com.
Summertime is save big time at Herbal Healer Academy. Long-term customers know summer is the time to stock up at herbalhealer.com.
And for new customers, welcome to the web's best place to save on vitamins, minerals, and more. Log on for summer specials, including all sizes of colloidal silver, colloidal minerals, and intestinal freedom on sale. Choose from Herbal Healer's great variety of weight loss products like apple cider vinegar, Hoodia, and Metabolic Complex and Pro-Metabolic, all on sale now. Also, the anti-parasite Intestinal Freedom and Wormwood Plus Complex, plus Stevia Liquid Sweetener and the Super Enzymes, all on sale for summer at herbalhealer.com. As always, we offer certificate correspondence courses in natural medicine. Enjoy same-day shipping and free online newsletter. Log on now to herbalhealer.com and look for summer specials to save big with our nation's leader in supplying quality natural medicine and education since 1988. Herbal Healer Academy.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Don't complain about your cable bill going up and up and up. Do something about it. Grab a pencil and jot down this special number. 1-855-905-MYTV. The more cable TV rates go up, the better digital satellite TV looks. Say goodbye to the cable guy. And get more of your favorite channels in 100% digital quality for less money. Call 1-855-905-MYTV. Sign up for packages starting as low as $19.99, and there's no equipment to buy. You get free HD TV upgrade, a free DVR upgrade, and free professional installation. You control what you watch, when you watch it. Record your favorite shows. Pause and rewind live TV. Even skip the commercials. Watch local channels too. At just $19.99, what are you waiting for? Pull out your major credit or debit card. Call 1-855-905-MYTV. 1-855-905-MYTV. Say goodbye to the cable guy. Cut costs and get more. 1-855-905-MYTV. 1-855-905-MYTV.
Jerome Clark, author of the UFO Encyclopedia and other books. You're listening to the Paracast.
Robert Schaefer joining us. We started with our discussion of the Phoenix Lights, Lights A, Lights B, the two different events. So we were talking about a video showing triangles here, Robert. Tell us more.
There was a guy named Terry Proctor who took a video, seems to have the only video of this so-called triangle, the first part of the Phoenix Lights, Phoenix Lights A. Somebody did I think it was from the Discovery Channel program, UFOs Over Phoenix. They basically drew the lines between these objects at the different times, and it's clear that over that period of 43 seconds, they changed their position with respect to each other. In other words, these were not solid objects fixed on a wing or something like that. They were five separate objects that were flying together in formation, five separate aircraft. So as I said, if you just plug the word Phoenix into my search box on Bad UFOs, and you'll find what I'm talking about. There's a picture of some A-10s flying in formation, and there's a frame from the Proctor video, and some more discussion of it, of Operation Snowbird, and so on. In fact, Randy Fitzgerald, who I met ages ago, I used to know him back when I was in the East Coast, he wrote a story about this in the, I believe it's the Reader's Digest, and this different article he wrote, an Examiner article, it said, once beyond the southern suburbs of Phoenix, the formation of lights followed Interstate 10 towards Tucson. Now, why would extraterrestrial vehicles or strange UFOs, whatever they were, follow the Interstate 10 toward Tucson? Well, there are airplanes going to land at Davis-Monthan Air Force Base in Tucson. And Interstate 10 will basically guide you right into it.
My question is, these types of flights occur routinely. Why all of a sudden, one night, everybody claims that they see, and we're talking quite hundreds of witnesses claiming they see something extraordinary. Why all of a sudden one night would routine flight activity be misconstrued as something high strange? It doesn't make sense to me.
Well, it's probably not that often that five aircraft go off in a formation and fly to Vegas or some other place like that. Well, let me read just what I have there. It says March 13th, 1997 was the last night of Operation Snowbird for the year. So obviously any aircraft that had flown off to other destinations, such as Las Vegas, had to return to Tucson. James McGahey reconstructs the story of the V-shaped formation as follows. Five A-10 jets from Operation Snowbird had flown from Tucson to Nellis Air Force Base near Las Vegas several days earlier and were now returning. The A-10 jets were flying VFR, that is visual flight rules, so there was no need for them to check in with aircraft along the route. They were following the main air corridor for air traffic traveling that route, the highway in the sky. Why a UFO would follow U.S. air traffic corridors is a mystery. Because they were flying in formation mode, they did not have on their familiar blinking collision lights, but instead their formation lights. In any case, FAA rules concerning aircraft lights and flight altitudes, etc., do not apply to military aircraft. The A-10s flew over the Phoenix area, flew onto Tucson, and landed at Davis Mountain. And I think that pretty well explains it. And there was an important point there that the formation light, civilian aircraft don't have formation lights. A formation light is something like a landing light. And so some people said they had their landing lights on. These are separate lights. They're very bright. And they're not intended for landing. They're intended so that the other aircraft in the, so that the aircraft in the formation can see each other. This also doesn't happen all the time. The reason, though, that there were so many people out there, you remember this was the time when the comet, the Hale-Bopp comet, was at its brightest as seen from Earth. And so a lot of people went out to try to see it when they were looking at the comet or looking for the comet, and then this flight went over. And that also explains why so many people saw the flare drop when it occurred. It has occurred at other times, but not nearly as many people see it. So for whatever reason, the Operation Snowbird was having a really busy night that one night when the people were out looking at the comet, and the result was this legend of the Phoenix Lights that has proved to be very, shall we say, convenient for some people to promote and to continue to sort of beat that dead horse. And so here we have it. Once a UFO story reaches sufficient critical mass, it will never die. Like Roswell. I think there's no real proof of anything out of the ordinary happened to Roswell. We have a very good explanation in Project Mogul and so on. But it doesn't matter what the facts are. It's become such a big thing, or the notion of the men in black or something. It's reached a critical mass. Once it reaches a critical mass, you know, it will never disappear. There's always going to be people believing it and promoting it, no matter what the facts might be.
Well, these are the men in black. Will Smith and Tommy Lee Jones got very rich over it.
Right.
So I don't know, and I find some of those stories to be incredible myself, but there you go. You know, I'm thinking here, Chris, that maybe we should go back to the remaining questions from Micah Hanks, since we dealt with the issue about what portion of UFO witnesses might be liars. You want to look up that set of questions, Chris, and go on with them?
Well, Micah Hanks was the one that posted the question about military eyewitnesses, pilots, police officers who report unknown flying objects. But his other question is a little bit more, I think, simple. And that is, Robert, do you think the Earth is the only planet with intelligent life forms in the universe?
I never said that. Everybody seems to think I said that. I mean, I consider that to be, shall we say, like the number one UFO fallacy that's going around. Is when I tell somebody, well, I really don't believe any of these sightings and crashes, whatever, are proof of anything alien or whatever. They say, what makes you so sure that we're the only intelligent life in the universe? And I say, I never said that. People just infer it. They just jump to that conclusion. Most people have no idea how huge the universe is. It's unbelievably large. I mean, we talk
about, yeah, the Drake equation would suggest that there are billions and billions of civilizations,
yeah,
out there.
You've got billions of stars in each, approximately 100 billion stars in our own Milky Way. And recent data seems to suggest that planets are extremely common. We thought before that planets might be kind of common. Now it appears to be even more than that. It appears to be more or less 100% of star systems. Individual stars have planets, not necessarily inhabited planets or even habitable, but at least planets are there. And again, it's like you said, with the Drake equation and the laws of large numbers, you take billions of stars, most of which have planets of some kind. Then you take billions of galaxies, each with billions of stars. We know that it's possible for life to evolve because, hey, it happened at least once. It's even possible.
Some might debate that, my friend.
Yeah, well, maybe. Well, that's right. Yeah, they say, well, somebody poof said poof and put us here. I think most of us listening to this can agree that life on Earth is very old. It goes back hundreds of millions of years, in fact, billions of years, in very simple life forms in one-celled organisms and so on. There's absolutely nothing to prevent this. I mean, the laws of physics are the same everywhere. That's something we seem to keep discovering over and over again, and we've never found any exceptions. The laws of physics that made it possible for life to evolve here on Earth certainly make it possible for life to evolve many other places. I'm not going to question that at all. What I am going to say, though, is that...
Yeah, but who says that they're coming here to
exactly
pick flowers and look at rocks here, like they've never seen them before? I've been saying that for years myself.
It would be just as difficult for them to get here as it would be for us to get there.
And well, based on our level of technology, if you're looking at a race that's perhaps, you know, hundreds of thousands of years technologically ahead of us and has access to possible, you know, as Arthur C. Clarke would put it, magic technology that would appear as magic to us. Who's to say that they don't have the capability of somehow going through the reaches of space and conquering the great distances?
Well, again, when new laws of physics are found, they don't repeal the ones that we have already. They add information to them. They add at the margins. You know, Einstein's relativity did not repeal what we knew about Newton and force and, you know, for every reaction, there's an equal and opposite reaction and so on. All those Newtonian laws are still valid, even under relativity, except that sort of at the margins at extremely high velocities, which, of course, we could not observe in the 17th and the 18th century. And I mean much higher velocities than orbital velocities and things, relativistic velocities. The laws, they need supplements to show that to calculate the effects because of that. But the old laws are still valid. And the same thing here. The laws we have now that say that you cannot go faster than light, and more than that, that you, as you attempt to go close to the speed of light, that the energy required, even for a small thing, is absurdly high.
Robert Schaefer, joining Gene and Chris, you're in
the Paracast.
Not just an alternative to the mainstream media. We're the premier independent talk radio network. We are GCN.
First came Attack of the Rockoids, and it was a critically acclaimed success. And now there's The Coming of the Protectors. A former military intelligence man is contacted by a space woman in a dream. A dream that turns out to be a nightmare, because evil forces on her distant planet are planning to conquer the Earth. This is gripping science fiction of the classic kind. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors. Find out more at Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids, R-O-C-K-O-I-D-S.com.
So here's what happened. I was placing an order online. The site went down. It took hours before it returned, but I'd already placed the order with another company. If your site goes down, you could lose business. And if you have a business or personal site, you'll want to know it's easy to run and it will stay online. At iWeb, your site is hosted on one of the most reliable networks in the world. Talk to a sales rep at iWeb.com. Use the promo code TECHNIGHTOWL for a special discount.
This alert just came in. This special announcement is for business owners and leaders of organizations who've been waiting for the right time to build. General Steel has made it impossible to wait any longer with rock-bottom prices that could save you thousands. That's right. General Steel, America's leader in pre-engineered structures, is offering buildings at prices you will never see again. Don't miss these prices. A 50 by 100 for $35,000. You heard right. That's 5,000 square feet for $35,000. Manufacturers, if you need a larger building, try a 100 by 100 commercial building for $129,000. You can't afford to rent with these prices. Imagine a 70 by 100 foot church building for under $69,000. With the economy improving and interest rates still at historic lows, you can't afford to wait. So call 866-91-STEEL. Lock in your price now. Call 866-91-STEEL. That's 866-917-8335.
This is big. big!
By popular demand, the Freeze Dry Guys Giant Factory Authorized Sale has been extended. Now through August, save 30 to 45% on number 10 cans of high-quality Mountain House freeze-dried foods from the Freeze Dry Guy. Now's the time to stock up on all factory fresh stock of the finest, best-tasting, longest-proven shelf-life foods in the industry at giant savings of 30 to 45%. But hurry, supplies are limited, so this sale is only through the end of August. Call 866-404-3663. Free shipping to the lower 48 states. Click freezedryguide.com or call 866-404-3663. That's freezedryguide.com. Hurry! The Giant Factory Authorized Mountain House Sale with savings of 30 to 45% is extended through August from the Freeze Dry Guy. The finest freeze-dried and dehydrated foods available anywhere for long-term storage.
The human body is extraordinary. Despite all the stresses we inflict upon it, it still works hard to stay in balance. Thousands upon thousands of people rely upon Heart and Body Extract to help their body stay balanced. This excellent 100% natural herbal formula helps maintain healthy blood pressure levels, cleans arteries, promotes good circulation, balances cholesterol, and more. HB Extract, paired with healthy lifestyle choices like good nutrition and exercise, can give you a life free of pain, sickness, and fear. Recapture your youthful vitality and experience your body healing itself with the aid of HB Extract. It's extremely effective and it starts working in just days. Visit HBExtract.com to learn more and to read scores of testimonials from satisfied customers. And we've never increased our price in over 10 years. That makes Heart and Body Extract as great a value now as it was the first day we sold it. A healthy heart is a happy heart. Call 866-295-5305 or go to HBExtract.com.
This is Kurt Sutton, the author of UFO Mysteries, and you're listening to the Paracast.
To cut this explanation about light travel short, Robert Schaefer, you don't believe in warp drive.
Well, warp drive was an idea that was dreamed up on Star Trek, not because of anything that a physicist had come up with. So as far as, you know, they say NASA has been experimenting with a warp drive, well, that's a some pretty vivid imagination.
What are they experimenting with?
None of that, as far as I'm aware. And if you look, it wasn't really NASA. It was some guy who had a NASA contract once who thought he knew how to build a Star Trek-type engine. Oh, the guy, Alcubierre, how do you say the name? Alcubierre, something like that. He's a physicist, I think, from South America or Mexico who would propose such a thing could be done where the spaceship would bend space in front of it and sort of pull itself along and then unbend the space behind it, and it would go at, you know, incredible velocities and so on. And even he says that, well, he isn't sure this could really be done. He kind of thinks it couldn't, but it's just a theory. Also, I mean, the way you bend space is with mass, and, you know, the mass of the sun, which is, I don't know how many, a million times that of the Earth or something like that, it only serves to bend space a small amount. In other words, when we look at a star during an eclipse of the sun and we see the star appears to be close to the edge of the sun and we can see this position is moved just a very small amount, just something that's difficult to measure even telescopically because of the warping of space of the sun. So that's a tiny amount of warping of space. Now, suppose you wanted a huge, huge amount of warping of space. You're going to push yourself ahead at some ridiculous velocity.
Engage warp 8.
You're going to get. Where are you going to get a mass? What do you need? A million solar masses? I mean, how are you going to do this?
I must apologize here, Robert. When I was asking questions before, I thought they were from Micah. They were from Blowfish. Now, Micah does have some questions on here, and one of them is the suggestion that ball lightning, plasmas, and little understood natural phenomenon are solutions to purported UFO reports, as Phil Klass early on, posited.
Right.
But he's wondering, that constitutes only using a speculative theory to answer, quote-unquote, another speculative theory. And if so, is this logically unsound? Or does it suggest that some speculation is warranted in UFO studies, as often Klass seemed to do?
No, I think I would agree with Micah here rather than with Klass and the plasmas. He, as you know, Klass, when he first started out looking at UFO cases and based on a few of the descriptions, He thought that this could have to do with plasma or ball lightning or something caused by electric wires that get corroded or get the salt spray from the ocean and so on. And but again, this is speculative, and I agree. It's really is it's using one speculative thing to answer another one. I think that rather than going down that road, I would just try to ask myself, is there any evidence other than just a witness who thinks they saw something out of the ordinary? You know, if the witness can produce videos or perhaps, you know, some sort of burn marks or something, and we could find some kind of consistency to this, then, you know, we could start to come up with something solid about it. But no, I don't think that that's a good path to go down.
Yeah, I would agree as well. It's it doesn't make much sense to say one thing is speculative and then propose something speculative to possibly explain that. Here's a question from SRL, who's a longtime poster at forum.theparacast.com, and he was wondering if you have heard of Michael Persinger, and if so, what are your opinions concerning his research relating to EMF fields and influencing human consciousness? And do you consider this research credible?
Yes, I was almost going to get into that, and I was going to mention earthquake lights while we were on the subject of speculative stuff, because that's one of Persinger's things, is that, well, earthquake lights may explain UFOs because of piezoelectric effects in the rocks and things like this. As far as Persinger has something he calls the God helmet, or not, maybe he doesn't call it that. Some people call it that, where you put this thing on and it gives you a magnetic field around your head, and that supposedly produces all these apparently paranormal effects. In fact, as I understand it, years ago, Michael Shermer of Skeptic Magazine did this thing with Persinger and reported that, you know, he did feel these effects, but then later other people tried to replicate them and could not. It's also pointed out that when people are put into MRI machines, that they are exposed to electric fields, magnetic fields, far, far in excess of anything that's in the God helmet, and yet people are not reporting, you know, paranormal events and experiences as they're in these machines. So I think that's I think it's just not that credible as far as, you know, trying to produce these effects directly in a person like that. Now, the kind of secondary stuff, like, for example, earthquake lights, and I recently had some arguments with some skeptics about this. Earthquake lights are wonderful in the sense that they can be anything you want them to be. They can be right there on the ground. They can be up in the sky. They can be any color, any shape. What's even more remarkable is they don't seem to depend on the size of the earthquake. In other words, an earthquake that is very powerful, let's say a 7 or 8 magnitude, might not produce any earthquake light, and then you might have a magnitude 4, which has only 1/10,000th as much energy as a magnitude 8 earthquake, and people will say, well, the magnitude 4 earthquake produced those lights in the sky that were reported. That by itself isn't logical. You would expect that the more energy released, the more earthquake lights, and then they don't have to match up in terms of space or location. I think Persinger was using like magnitude 3 and 4 earthquakes that had occurred several months earlier to prove that to try to explain earthquake lights that we're seeing, you know, months later. This is just too loosey-goosey. It isn't convincing. If somebody could come up with some halfway, rigorous explanation and theory about when and where you're going to see earthquake lights, and if it could be tested, then I could believe it. But what I've seen so far, and the claims based on people like Persinger and others, John Deering, I think his name is.
Right, and Paul Devereaux.
Yeah, and these claims have been going around for at least 20 years. And again, with something like that that's unusual and interesting comes up, and if it doesn't go anywhere in 20 years or more, then that kind of says there really isn't anywhere for it to go.
Well, how about Hezdalen?
Oh, that place. Well, again, I haven't researched that primarily myself or to a lot of I can't speak to the details of it. What I've heard is pretty much the same as a lot of these things, the Marfa lights and whatever. Also, a few of them seem to be hoaxes that, you know, somebody said they saw, you know, like a red dot on the ground that appeared to be bouncing around. And I think if somebody was playing games with a little, you know, laser. And it's not beyond. A lot of people like to play little jokes and tricks. That wouldn't surprise me. But I can't say a lot about it. But I think it's pretty much the same as earthquake lights and the Marfa lights and the Brown Mountain lights. And people see lights. And again, there's no real consistency to what they're seeing and how they're seeing it and when they're seeing it. So, you know, until somebody can try to nail it down better than that, I'm not very convinced.
Yeah, it's like trying to nail Jell-O to the wall.
That's pretty much it.
So in general, then, what do you think the Brown Mountain lights are?
The Brown Mountain lights, as I recall, although it's in the latest paper by, I forget who the authors are, about the earthquake lights, the one that was just released, I think, January of this year, or at least it was first written about in January of this year, they view the Brown Mountain lights as being the earthquake lights because there was a magnitude 3 earthquake there at some point in time. And my understanding is that they're basically lights. They're either automobile or locomotive lights seen in the distance.
But they've been reported, allegedly, since the early to mid 1800s, correct me if I'm wrong.
I'm not sure exactly how far back it goes, but I think it does go back to the 19th century, and there were indeed locomotives in the 19th century. So at least that's how it's supposed to be. There were some fairly detailed reports that were made. There was the U.S. Geological Survey. I forget the guy's name. He did a paper which is still available, and basically it was what I'm saying, the automobile and locomotive lights. And this was back like around, you know, 1919 or something. And Phil Klass has a chapter, one of his books, I think it was UFOs Explained, about this, in which he goes into all this in considerable detail.
You know, I remember something else that I saw in terms of lights, or at least I checked out, called the Somerville Light in South Carolina, about 20 minutes from Charleston. It was supposedly the head or the lantern carried by a ghost sitting over some old railroad tracks. But I didn't see it. We have Robert Schaefer joining Gene and Chris. You're in
the Paracast.
UnseenNow.com, proud sponsor of GCN. Unseen Now's unparalleled encryption tools keep your communications secure. GCN.
How many good people procrastinate? When was the last time you updated your last will and testament, your living will, and your health care power of attorney? If you could get these documents included with your Legal Shield membership for no additional charge, wouldn't it just make sense to have the peace of mind of owning a Legal Shield membership? Worry less and live more with lsprotection.com. That's lsprotection.com, or call 855-340-SAVE. That's 855-340-7283.
Results will vary from case to case.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson. Have you ever wondered why banks, stockbrokers, investment advisors won't talk about gold IRAs? They've been available since 1986, yet the financial industry won't recognize the value of gold for your retirement. Gold has outperformed paper investments, yet no word about IRAs. If you would like to have gold for your retirement, call 800-686-2237. Don't get left behind by rising inflation and low returns. Call 800-686-2237. Secure your future and call 1-800-686-2237.
Moms of America, stand up and stop taking abuse from your kids.
I pledge never to let my kid disrespect me ever again.
I pledge to stop letting my daughter walk all over me.
I pledge to stop living in fear of my son's anger.
I pledge never to feel like a bad parent ever again. Because I'm not.
I pledge to stop letting my child's behavior control my home.
I pledge to be a mom with kids who listen. A total transformation mom.
I'm Janet Lehman, co-creator of the Total Transformation Program. We created the Total Transformation to help parents with difficult child behavior. Now, I'm giving it away free. All you need to do is get the program and let us know how it works for you. We'll let you keep it for free.
Call 1-800-256-7795. That's 1-800-256-7795. Call now. Call 1-800-256-7795. That's 1-800-256-7795. 256-7795.